There
okay.
we go.
All right. So, good morning, everyone. let's say it's been an interesting morning. It's been one thing after another, but that's good. That's good. I want to welcome you all this morning to our Awakening Together gathering, weekly gathering. And I don't know, Lynn, if we have had an opportunity to greet one another. I will assume that we have not yet done that, and we'll take this opportunity to greet one another while Lynn plays us a short song. If everybody wants to just say hello to one another.
Yes, you stay on the line.
Say it again, Lynn.
You stay on the line while I'm playing the song, but don't talk while I'm playing the song, or you'll be talking at the song. So,
yes,
we got it.
I'll just be quiet now. Everybody greets one another.
All right, here comes the song.
What we are.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn. Thanks for everything this morning. I really regret missing seeing all the greetings. That's my favorite part of the service. I'm sorry that I missed that, but it's really good to be here with all of you. And greetings from sunny Clarksville, Indiana. Okay, so next in our service, we want to look at our purpose and values. And from our purpose and values page, I'd like to read the following. There is consistent wisdom in the universe. It shows up in all religions. Again, hang on a second, guys. I'm sorry. I thought I had it all printed here, but I see my words have even been cut off. Here it is. There's consistent wisdom in the universe. It shows up in all religions, in philosophy, in all cultures, and throughout time. This wisdom is not unique or new. It is owned by no one and by no organization. No one has to go to a special place or special teacher to find it. It is the most abundant wisdom in the universe. Once one opens his or her heart to this wisdom, it appears everywhere by the hand of universal grace. There is also a way of not seeing universal wisdom. We all have the ability to be distracted from it by self-limiting and segmenting beliefs. So what is Awakening Together? Awakening Together is a universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. We are also dedicated to recognizing the ways we deny universal wisdom by adopting personal beliefs and biases. We want to recognize these limitations so we can free ourselves from them and open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. Our purpose. We are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. How are we doing there, Lynn? I'm hearing an echo. Is everything good?
Yeah, everything is good. I don't know where the echo is coming from, but I'm kind of hearing that too. But everything seems to be going okay. So I guess carry on, and I'll try to figure out something from my end. Maybe there's something going on. And people in the room are saying all is good, so they're not hearing what you're hearing. So carry on.
Thank you, Lynn. Okay, for announcements. First of all, Awakening Together gathers together in the sanctuary every Wednesday morning at 10:30 a.m. for our weekly prayer circle. Please join us for our weekly prayer circle if you can. You may also submit prayer requests you have to regina.awakeningtogether@gmail.com or via the contact form on our website. Secondly, the last chance to register for the upcoming Jesus of the New Testament class is this coming Wednesday, February the 18th. The class will be offered on Wednesday evenings from February 25th through March 18th at 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time. Regina is the class facilitator for the Jesus of the New Testament class. The cost for the class is $80. Homework begins 1 week before the first class. For more information, visit our website, click on classes, and then click new classes beginning in February, March. There's also a Tao Te Ching class beginning in March. There's actually two classes. There'll be one on Tuesday night that I will facilitate. There's one on Wednesday morning that Nikki will facilitate. You can learn more about those classes at that same link. It's once again time for our monthly online satsang in the Awakening Together Sanctuary. That will be tonight. Our guest will be Nirmala. Nirmala offers free ebooks, audios, videos, and articles on his website, Endless Satsang. His friend and mentor, Adi Ashanti, describes Nirmala this way. What is appealing about Nirmala is his humility and lack of pretense, which welcomes whatever arises within the field of experience. In the midst of this welcoming is always an invitation to inquire deeply within, to the core of who and what you are. Again and again, Nirmala points the questions back to the questioner and beyond, to the very source of existence itself, to the faithless awareness that holds both the question and the questioner in a timeless embrace. Of course, one of the best ways to get to know Nirmala is through direct experience with his gentle nature. So please plan on joining us tonight at 8 p.m. for Satsang with Nirmala. And finally, I want to tell you guys about the upcoming fall retreat, 2015 fall retreat, that's going to be held at the Franciscan Retreat Center in lovely Colorado Springs. This is a beautiful center. It's got a labyrinth. It's got hiking trails, lots of sunshine, lots of opportunities for joining, for contemplation. There are actually three fall retreats. The first is with Jan Frazier. Entitled A Weekend Being. A Weekend Being with Jan Frazier will be from Friday, October 30th through Sunday, November the 1st. The second is A Week Within with Regina Dawn Akers. That will be Sunday, November the 1st through Friday, November the 6th. And then finally, A Weekend Beyond with Bentinho Massaro. That will begin on that Friday, November the 6th through Sunday, November the 8th. So you join us for one, two, or all three of these retreats. Again, Jan Frazier, Regina Dawn Akers, and Bentinho Massaro, Friday, October the 30th through Sunday, November the 8th at the Franciscan Retreat Center. And we're really excited about this retreat, folks, so plan on signing up. You can sign up and get full details at awakeningtogether.org/events/2015 Fall Retreat in Colorado Springs. So I'm sure that Barb is there posting that for us as we speak. So, but we are excited about this, and we hope that you can plan on joining us. Okay, and at this point, we're ready for our opening song, and Lynn is going to play us a song. Sit and listen. Went to school.
and hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very
Lynn, I've got to tell you that, that just really brought tears to my eyes. It's so sweet. Thank you, Lynn, for picking the perfect song to lead us into this morning's talk. Before we begin the talk, I would like to say a prayer and express my gratitude once again. My gratitude for the ability to be with all of you. My gratitude for the lessons learned, for the opportunity to review those lessons, for the opportunity to share my experiences. I am so grateful. I am so very, very grateful. I also would pray that this morning, as I share my experiences with you, that I am able to get out of the way, that I'm unable to share with you the depth of my gratitude, the depth of my true understanding. And again, for the personality to just move out of the way. Okay. Amen. At this point, we'll have an inspirational reading. Our reading this morning is by my husband, Tom Conway. He will read excerpts from an article by Don Dehn. That's D-A-A-N-D-E-H-N. Don Dehn is a New Zealand course student, teacher, author, and this article is from his course commentary website, miracles.org.nz, and again, they're excerpts from an article entitled "The Ego is a Contradiction," and I'll turn this over to Tom.
Thank you, darling. Good morning, all. To reiterate, the name of the article is "The Ego is a Contradiction." There is an old adage in data processing circles which says garbage in, garbage out. This well-worn computer maxim is also applicable to biological cybernetics, in other words, the mind. Around 1600 years ago, Augustine of Hippo said, "The punishment of every disordered mind is its own disorder." And A Course in Miracles echoes, "Dreams are chaotic because they are governed by your conflicting wishes." During the past 100 years, and most particularly the last 30, there's been a rapidly increasing realization that mind is probably the fundamental creative force. Much of the current discovery in quantum physics points to both a fundamental essence, which is non-material, and the interconnectedness of all things. We are only barely beginning to understand what mind is and how it works. That mind is responsible for our experience has become an accepted theory for at least a significant minority. Many entertain, at least conceptually, that the outpicturing of our life at any given moment is the result of our thinking. As a result, there seem to be three general responses by today's metaphysicians to an event in their lives. First, those who say there are no accidents that was supposed to happen. This approach seems to place cause external and almost always seems to imply that it is part of some grand plan, that it has cosmic significance. Not so. Of course it was supposed to happen. Of course it was no accident. It is the natural and inevitable consequence of the totality of all the feelings, thoughts, and actions that came before it. But that is all. To speculate that it is part of some mystical plan is to avoid acceptance of responsibility and to fail to see cause as it is. Secondly, there are those who accept and even take pride in the creative power of mind and love to take credit for their demonstrations when things are going our way. But when things go awry, they want to blame fate, circumstances, God, astrology, anything else. It seems to be a source of personal pride to be a co-creator unless the results are undesirable. The third type accepts the theory in all cases, but for the most part, the application is misguided, vague, and not helpful. For example, recently, I was talking with a friend on the phone, and she related that she had been ill with a cold. "I wonder why I chose that," she asked rather rhetorically. She has seemingly accepted the responsibility for her experience, and at least vaguely understands that whatever comes to her does so at her own bidding. The problem is her question, why, is not a proper question. To ask why implies that there is some sort of viable explanation as to the reason one would impose illness upon himself. Currently, there does in fact seem to be a sort of tacit assumption that we choose difficult or painful experiences to teach ourselves lessons. What possible logic would there be in self-abuse to learn a lesson? The acceptance of this theory at all demonstrates how perverse our thinking has become. It is a corollary to the vengeful God belief, or no pain, no gain. Our belief in the value of sacrifice goes very, very deep. Could it be that why is a carefully, though possibly unconsciously, chosen question in order to avoid seeing the real cause? Looking for a specific cause of a specific problem is like looking for the specific cause of a single wave on the ocean. The question why, but obscures the real question, thereby ensuring that the fundamental problem continues unseen and therefore unsolved. In fact, why avoids the real acceptance of responsibility as cause, and usually complicates a situation by adding guilt, doubt, and confusion. Why assumes that we understand the actual process of causation? But of course, a miracle tells us our understanding is so limited that what we think we understand is but confusion born of error. All outcomes derive from our desires and nothing else. We see precisely what we want to see and nothing else. According to A Course in Miracles, you see what you expect, and you expect what you invite. If this is indeed so, what is the cause of so much conflict and chaos in our lives? A Course in Miracles points out, no one desires pain, but he can think that pain is pleasure. No one would avoid his happiness, but he can think that joy is painful, threatening, and dangerous. Everyone will receive what he requests, but he can be confused indeed about the things he wants, the state he would attain. What can he then request that he would want when he receives it? He has asked for what will frighten him and bring him suffering. What we fail to recognize is that any momentary outcome, which is in reality just a partial manifestation of an ongoing process, is the result of the ongoing totality of our desires, thoughts, and actions. Not just one desire captured at a particular moment in time or carried at the forefront of our consciousness. We are, for the most part, so unconscious that our conscious desires and thoughts have very little to do with the form and circumstances of our lives. Radical, you may say. You bet, but that is the way it is. A more appropriate question would be, how did I choose this sickness? Here it must be re-emphasized that there is no suggestion that one actively wanted or consciously and specifically chose an illness or a car wreck or the experience which it brings. What I am suggesting is that the illness or car wreck is the outcome of many conflicting desires and actions, both conscious and unconscious, of which we did not see the entire picture, the whole situation. We do not know our own mind. Individually, our worldview is exceptionally myopic. We consistently fail, again I say willfully, even if unconsciously, to see how our lives are inextricably intertwined with others, the environment, the planet, the universe, and that all of our own individual actions and desires are mutually interdependent. Quite often, we are attempting to manifest conflicting desires simultaneously, or things that conflict with the needs of others. And therefore, we manifest conflict. What else? It is your thoughts alone that cause you pain. Nothing external to your mind can hurt or injure you in any way. There is no cause beyond yourself that can reach down and bring oppression. No one but yourself affects you. There is nothing in the world that has the power to make you ill or sad or weak or frail. It's from A Course in Miracles. Once we really see this process as it arises, we discover that sickness, accidents, conflict, loss, all arise for one reason only. Conflict in the mind, lack of clarity, lack of unity.
Thank you, Tom. All right. So, again, my talk today is titled The Source of Conflict, and I'm sure none of you are terribly surprised to hear that the what's the source of conflict? I am. as always, for me, in preparing these talks, the topic presented itself. Thus, it's not theoretical, it's not hypothetical. And in fact, I have been in the midst of conflict for several weeks now. And given that, I really had to question why. Why was I finding myself in the midst of this conflict? The question how that Don then asked didn't come until much later. In fact, I wasn't able to ask that question until I sat down and got ready to prepare this talk. So I was asking, well, why am I finding myself in the midst of so much conflict? And if I was looking for a conceptual answer, I could have had that early on. Answers like, I only experience what's in my own mind, the world merely reflects my thoughts, I wouldn't be upset if I could recognize that this, this conflict, and in fact, this world's not real, yada, 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 right? All the generalizations that we hear. But, you know, for me, these generalities, while true, just don't really seem to be helpful. Unless I'm given some kind of divine revelation, which I sometimes get, or until I can actually digest these snippets of truth, unless I can integrate these truth thoughts through contemplation or through application, I can't appreciate them. So just telling me these things, oh, don't worry about it, it's not real, is not helpful. So just to say, oh, I'm the source of conflict, while I appreciate that on one level, to me was not helpful. So, indeed, when I was presented with the thought that I am the source of any conflict that I experience in response to a ministerial preparation program homework assignments a couple of weeks ago, I argued with that statement. In that assignment, we were invited to look at the connection between our perception of another person as wrong and the attempt to get rid of guilt in our own minds. And looking at that question and looking at a specific incident in my life, I argued that while I could control my own actions, I couldn't control the actions of others. So I couldn't control the underhanded actions of somebody that I had gotten upset with. As I'm sure you can see, the very idea that that their actions were underhanded carries with it the idea that there's an approved way to act and that there's an unapproved way to act. And this approval and disapproval, of course, are meted out by me, right? And these are meted out in relation to who I think I am, what I think I need, how my world is structured. So my very argument belied the truth of what we're finding, that the source of conflict is myself. Also, I claimed that what was helpful to me was in controlling my reactions to others. It's there that I found the opportunity for spiritual growth. And again, I see now that this argument is really disingenuous because it places the source of conflict outside of myself. So, even though my inner guide and everybody else was trying to help me with these conflict issues, as the service approached, I found more and more opportunities to examine conflict. As the seeming harbinger of conflicts in the weeks to come, the Awakening Together Board of Trustees seemed to think, or I perceived them as thinking, that I was being controlling or even combative. Later, the condo board here seemed to be giving me and my husband a hard way to go about our planned renovations. Then we had plumbing issues, which led to further friction between me and the condo board president. Finally, 2 days ago, somebody called the building inspector, and he issued a citation for building without a permit. In addition to these conflicts, these seeming conflicts, an organization with which I was formerly affiliated sought to rescind my subscription to a program that it was my understanding I had lifelong access to. So, you know, none of these conflicts are earth-shattering. You know, nobody went to jail, nobody lost their life, right? None of them are earth-shattering, but each of them seems to stand as a witness to the conflict, not only in my life, but in the world, to conflict as an ongoing phenomenon in my life and in the world. So, at the same time I'm going through these experiences, as I said, I am in the MPP program. We're studying John Mundy's book, Living a Course in Miracles, as part of that program. And I am being, we're also doing the lessons of A Course in Miracles, and I'm being reminded that There are no neutral thoughts. I'm not alone in experiencing the effect of my seeing. And actually, when you look at these things, and again, I'm just so blessed to be able to do these talks because, you know, in preparing for the talk, when I get to see the overview, right, I get to look at these things as a whole, and I see that I'm blessed to have my inner guide so deftly, so sweetly lead me and give me all the lessons that I need when I need them. So, contemplating my experiences, contemplating the lessons that I've been given, I do see that the fundamental truth that I am responsible for what I see. This really came home to me in a divinely revelatory way as I berated the condo association president on the phone for what I assumed was her part in my building permit citation. She said to me that she had been nothing but helpful and kind, and that it was I who had brought about the conflict. As she said that, I knew in my heart, in a way that went beyond the fact of anything that had happened, I knew she was right. I knew that it was me who had brought about the conflict. As the Course says, I am responsible for what I see. I chose the feelings I experienced, and I decided on the goal I would achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I asked for and received as I had asked. Of this truth, the Course iterates, this is the only thing you need do for vision, happiness, release from pain, and the complete escape from sin, all to be given you. Say only this, but mean it with no reservations, for here the power of salvation lies. Okay, so how does this knowledge that I'm responsible for what I see, how does this help me convert my why question into a how question, as Don Dinn suggested? How does taking responsibility for sight help me transcend conflict? Well, it helps me do just what he said. It helps me to see that the conflict I'm experiencing is the result of the ongoing totality of my desires, thoughts, and actions, not just one desire captured at a particular moment in time. It helps me to see what I focus my desire upon, what I value, what I believe about myself in relation to others, what my belief about time is, and what my priorities are. Let's take this condo renovation project, for example, and the conflicts that seem to arise around it. So what have I asked for in regard to this condo renovation project and what I'm dealing with? What have I asked for? What are the beliefs that I am actively participating in that lead to conflict and led in particular to this conflict? Okay, let's look at them. I believe in duality. I believe in separate interests. I believe that there's only so much to go around and that I need only give you as much information, as much respect, as much whatever it is so that I can get what I want and you won't get in my way. So that you won't get in the way of my personal self-interest. I believe in lack and limitation. I believe that going by the rules can cost me more money than I have. I believe that being less than forthcoming with the condo president is necessary so that the information she has cannot deprive me of something I want and I might not get. I believe in time. I believe it's okay to sacrifice my peace of mind now so that I can complete this project and I have a nice, sweet place where I can be peaceful, or at the very least where I can learn to be peaceful. Okay, and how about that program that my organization removed me from, or that they want to remove me from? Let's look at that. The truth is, I don't even want to be in that program. You know, but I argue to myself when debating how to handle it in the midst of the conflict, it's the principle. You know, I have this belief people should always act with integrity. If they don't, then I'm free to go, you know, to go on the attack, fight for justice and what's rightfully mine. And although I would do this in the name of truth, you know, it's not about truth. It's not about peace of mind. It's about what I think is right. And who's the I that thinks that this is right? Who's the I that's attempting to maintain themselves, establish what's important? So the question becomes, do I want peace or do I want justice? What is it that I desire? Where am I putting my faith? Where am I putting my desire? Okay, having looked at these beliefs, let's be sure that they don't make me a bad person. They don't even make me a bad student. What they really do is they show me that my biggest problem is I forget. I forget to practice what I truly desire. I forget to practice what I truly believe. And then I wonder why I experience conflict. As I wrote in Contemplation last week, it is desire that must be examined. You hold all the power. What you wish you will have, you may believe that you desire one thing over another, the pleasure of this one's company over that of another. The true object of your desire is that which you focus upon. To see your focus merely retrace the thoughts of any given day. When distracted, what are you distracted by? When focus is used as a corrective device, you are drawn back from the physical objects of your desire to your true desire, which is to know the true nature of yourself. When you lose sight of your true desire, you receive as you have asked. You receive the experience of your physical world as your reality. All right, I just want to read that last line again. When you lose sight of your true desire, you receive as you have asked. You receive the experience of the physical world as your reality. Okay. So taking responsibility for sight reminds me what I want and why I want it. Taking responsibility for sight reminds me that in order to experience peace, I have to be vigilant. I have to make it a present priority, not I'll get this, 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 and this, and then I'll have the opportunity to be peaceful. If I really want to experience the truth of my being, if I want to experience peace now, if I want to experience truth, I have to deny the denial of truth. I have to remind myself that selfish pursuit of my own personal interest, that's not going to bring me happiness. Those are not my true desires. I have to let go of my allegiance to these ideas that there are certain principles that have to be met, that people have to behave in a certain way, that justice requires people to act in a certain way. I have to remember that when I'm tempted to believe my misperceptions, what's really required is surrender. I can't fix problems. I can't absolve myself of guilt. The only remedy is to surrender to oneness. In surrendering and asking the Holy Spirit to help me see differently, that's a way of asking Holy Spirit to remove these blinders, these self-imposed blinders that I choose to wear. By choosing to believe in separate people with separate needs. I have no separate needs. The only helpful prayer is to ask to see my oneness. So, how does taking responsibility for sight help me transcend conflict? Well, it brings me to a place where I remember the power of decision is my own. The power of decision is my own. The world is as I would have it be. As the Course says, here is the world you do not want brought to the one you do. And here the one you do is given you because you want it. Yet for this, the power of your wanting must first be recognized. You must accept its strength and not its weakness. You must perceive that what is strong enough to make a world can let it go. And you can accept correction if it is willing to see that it was wrong. And I want to finish up with something I had read in John Munday's book, and then a personal experience of my own. In John Munday's book, Living a Course in Miracles, he says, "The holy instant is a moment of aliveness, a time in which we give and receive perfect communication with all minds. It is a moment in which we choose forgiveness over a grievance. My friend, Reverend Ellen Cravat, tells the story of her relationship with her mother. They were stuck in power and control issues. Her mother was 96 when she died, and Ellen took care of her during the last 10 years of her life. During that time, she moved to the in-between world, and she forgot about her grievances. One day, she called Ellen over to her bed, and she said, 'We have such a lovely relationship. How did that happen?' There is a place outside of time where a choice is made for forgiveness instead of guilt. It is this instant and every instant in which truth and love abide." I'm still here. I was looking for another. There was another story here that I wanted to share, but I'm not sure that what I'm going to be able to come up with that. Give me just a second, folks. I apologize. Okay, here's the second story from John Mundy's book. "I knew a man whose father was a rough, difficult man. The son had a lot of trouble dealing with his father, and often he felt he hated him. Then one day, the father, who was now getting older, was hit by a car while crossing the street. A few days later, he suffered a stroke. He never quite recovered. After that, his mind changed, and he became more childlike, more loving. Now the man whom the son had hated was altogether different and dependent upon his son to care for him. What a dilemma. The old man who the son had hated was no longer hateful. Now he was loving. As the son was willing to let go of the past, a healing occurred in him and in the relationship. All that was left, all that was real between them, was love. It is always like that, buried within, sometimes not even too deeply. Love is trying to find a way out past all the trappings of the ego." And who helps love find the way out past the trappings of the ego? I do. Who is the source of conflict? I am. Who is the source of love? I am. Now, I told you I was going to share a story with you guys from my own life, and I can tell you that both of these stories reminded me of my relationship with my father. And as some of you may know, I had a conflict with my father over the summertime. It felt like a major life event to me, and recently, I have had, moving back home, I have had an opportunity to spend time with my father. I've recently even spent a couple of days with him in the hospital after his surgery. And I can tell you that it's the most beautiful relationship to see and to participate in and to be a part of. The question became, what do I desire? What do I desire? I desire to have a loving relationship with my father. And that made it easy. When I really looked at what do I desire, it all flowed from there. So, who is the source of conflict? Me. who is the source of love and peace in my life? Me. I am. All right. Lynn's going to play us a song here in just a minute. Barbara will be posting the donation link during this time. Remember, we operate on your donations, and we appreciate you. So, Lynn, it's over to you for the song. Thank you, Lynn.
Been a long time running, I never knew then what I know now. That the fruits, they always come in, but you can't go around just knocking them down. It takes a long time to show in, we plant the seeds then and we look at them now. But the roots are always growing, no matter if I'm there or never around. Whatever grows will grow, whatever dies will die, whatever works will work, whatever flies will fly, whatever fails will fail, what's meant to soar will soar. I am planting seeds, nothing
it's like
more.
Your whole life. You've been training for this moment, and when the time comes, you just disown it, meaning you just surrender, don't control it, not interested in the clay pots and mold it, or sitting next to the path trying to unfold it, or waiting for the fruits to fall down toward you, let it go, and now you're flowing, feeling quite gorgeous, so you take steps away instead of towards it. What a rush, feeling freedom with nothing to hold. We've been taught that what you touch will always turn to gold, and now we're learning when we let it go, it overflows with no credit to take, cause no credit is home. A higher power working deeper with the seeds are sowed, and when the seeds are true, then there's seeds of gold. But the real gold is joy when life starts to flow, and when it does, you just smile, cause now you know.
I spent a long time running, I never knew then what I know now. Let the fruits, they always come in, but you can't go around just knocking them down. It takes a long time to show in, we plant the seeds then, and we look at them now. But the roots are always growing, no matter if I'm there or never around. Whatever grows will grow, whatever dies will die, whatever works will work, whatever flies will fly, whatever fails will fail, what's meant to soar will soar. I am planting seeds.
Whatever grows, yep, will grow. When it grows, it grows.
Whatever dies will die.
And when it dies, it dies. Come on.
Works, will
if it works, it works.
Whatever flies will
let it fly, let it
whatever
fly.
Whatever fails will fail.
If it fails, it fails.
It's meant to soar.
Thanks, Lynn. That's great. Now is the time in our program for open sharing. And given that I can't see anyone, Lynn, I'm going to turn this mic over to you for that portion of the program. I will go ahead and experience my gratitude to all of you for allowing me to be here and to share with you. I am blessed. I am truly blessed. And thanks so much. And Lynn, I'm turning it all over to you.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Jacqueline. And, yeah, so if anybody has anything that they'd like to say about what we talked about this morning or any other thing, please put your hand up. I will turn the mic over to you and let you share as well. Me personally, Jacqueline, I'm very, very touched by your message. I honestly, oh my God, you know, this is just so true. It is my personal responsibility for my own thoughts, and it is my own thoughts that cause me to suffer. It has nothing whatsoever to do with anybody else or anything else in the world. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing to be able to take that responsibility and to find joy in my life. So, beautiful, beautiful talk on your part. And again, anybody who wants to share, please put your hand up. I'm sure that Jacqueline would love to hear what you all have to say as well about, her teaching this morning. Tom, also, I wanted to thank you for taking the mic and sharing that amazing reading as well. I see Kathy Smith has her hand up, so I'm letting go of the mic for you, Kathy.
Can you confirm I'm being heard, please? Anybody hear me? Oh, good. Jacqueline, I just want to say I truly enjoyed your sharing this morning, most of all because I felt it just came from the heart. You were so open about everything, and it felt very genuine. I noticed, you know, certainly underneath all of the seeming, madness that goes on in everyone's world is that spark of desire, and the reason why we come and join together in this room together as well. In addition to that, what occurred to me while you were sharing and talking about, you know, what is it we really want, what is it we truly desire, and looking at, you know, all of the actions that I can notice about myself in the world and go back to that inquiry, you know, who is it that is desiring this and what is it for? And make it very simple for myself to notice what's going on and ask for a change of mind. And one of the things I love about Jan Fraser's book, which hopefully I'll be reading and able to transmit like I am now, yay, amen, a little bit later today, one of the things that struck me about her book was a couple of chapters that ask for, you know, brutal honesty, really, with oneself about what it is you truly desire. And something I've noticed for myself with that questioning is that my desire seems to be split. Shocker. And there seems to be the desire to awaken to the truth of myself, and there also seems to still be desire for, quote, things in the world. And her approach to that is simply to have me ask myself and be honest about that fact. It's not something to use to condemn myself about. It's not anything like that. It's simply a noticing of what is right now and being in acceptance of that, as opposed to using that as a quote spiritual judgment against myself, because there's this noticing that there still seems to be things I want in the world, or I want situations to appear this way, or I want the, as you said, the association to, you know, go my way. And what I've noticed, you know, for myself is it's the me, I. It's what I want. And that I is always egoically driven. So it's an opportunity to look at every single one of these things that go on and just reel it back in and ask an inquiry. You know, who is the I that is upset here? Who is the I that is demanding this to be a certain way? Who is the I that, you know, in just acknowledging what's going on and then simply dropping that story and asking for help. So that's all I wanted to share. And again, thank you very much, Jacqueline, for your personal sharing as well as your husband's reading. I really enjoyed that article as well. Releasing the mic.
All right. So let me put the mic back on to... All right, so and I see Dove and Regina both have their hands up, so I'll let go of the mic for Dove and then Regina. Go ahead, Dove.
Well, I was going to mention that, as Regina said the last time that Jacqueline shared here, she has built her case perfectly and then made her case... I guess her legal background is wonderful in doing that. Yeah, that was really just beautiful sharing, and thank you so much for bringing this to the attention of Don Den from New Zealand. He has a wonderful website, which I went to, miracles.org.nz, N-Z for New Zealand. And that was a great reading, and it led beautifully right into your sharing, Jacqueline. So thank you so much. Turning this mic over to you, Regina.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to Jacqueline for reminding us that my only responsibility is to accept the atonement for myself. And as long as there is a single person or a single circumstance that I cannot accept fully without losing any sense of love or peace at all. I mean, just, you know, I need to be that open ocean of love. And everything that comes into my awareness, It cannot affect that I am that open ocean of love. And if there is anything that seems to shift me from being the open ocean to at all being the surface, the stormy surface again, then that means there's something in me, that still needs to be looked at. It never has anything to do with anything else ever. So I want to thank Jacqueline for reminding us of that. Bye.
All right, is there anybody else who would like to share anything about what Jacqueline shared? I love the whole, I mean, we're really talking about undoing, doing the atonement. So it's just so perfectly beautiful that what you shared and from the article from Don Den just really brought it all together. So, does anybody else? Yes.
Hi, this is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
The only way I can bounce in. But I just wanted to mention that it always does show up. For me, it shows up as a memory problem, but the memory problem is commensurate with my desire. When my desire shifts to predominantly... oneness to unification, then my memory improves dramatically. To me it is a memory problem, but it's a memory problem based on having conflicting desires. So the application, the choice to remember what I want always runs hand in hand with the level of my desire for the purification of my soul. So when I first started this journey to recognition of that one statement by Jesus, I just kind of picked it out and he said, "But first, the power of your wanting must first be recognized." And I had to really look at that. I just looked at that, and I looked at that, and the power of my wanting must first be recognized. And obviously that puts all of the discretion for my experience within my own sphere. And everything I've learned since, what I've realized is that the same book has been written by so many different authors. It's just the same book. It's the same book being reiterated and reiterated. And it's just, everything is just reminding me of the fact that I am the source. I am the source of everything I experience. I am the source. There is nothing else to go to. There's nothing else to point at. There's nothing else to look at. I am the source. So for me, I took particular joy in hearing Jacqueline's sermon this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tom, as well. Wow. Yes, and just to remind myself of that all the time. And, you know, the stories that you were reading, Jacqueline, about the, especially I was touched by when people get have like a physical thing that happens to them where they don't remember all of the, you know, the assault of the past or the upsets of the past, and they come from a place where there is no memory of any problem or you know, that how you can have a peaceful relationship when you're not holding the past against your brother. And so, you know, I really loved both of those stories and recognized that that really is the proof of innocence is that, well, it never happened, first off, that none of the things that we think happened ever happened. But even when, and I've seen this, this is something that actually has been shown to me in a really very clear way, that when I'm not connected to the world of form in the in memory or in future projection, and I am just in the very moment of now, none of that stuff exists. It absolutely does not exist. None of this illusory stuff is even in existence at all. And being in that situation where I'm in this perfect oneness or this holy instant of now, I don't even think about it. It has never existed. It doesn't exist and it never will exist. And, so I think a lot of people are afraid of letting go of this world because they think they're going to have a sadness or, you know, that I'm going to mourn over the loss of this thing that I loved. And in actuality, you don't even know that you thought these crazy thoughts. It doesn't even exist in your mind at all. And as far as the other people that you're thinking you're leaving behind, they don't even exist either. And you know, it's like it completely disappears from the mind in the right mind. So I like that we have these examples of when, you know, you think that it's, you know, some, you know, dementia or Alzheimer's or something like that. In reality, it is forgetting what never happened. And Roy Rudy says there's no need to try and dig up bones to battle with. Yeah, there's because they don't exist and they never were. So once again, thank you to and thank you, Jacqueline, for being willing to do this over Skype. I'm really truly enjoyed this interaction and being able to hear you guys like we're right next to each other is a joy until we are right next to each other. So do you have anything else to say, Jacqueline? And I'll play a closing song.
Nothing to say, but again, to express my gratitude for the opportunity to be here with you, Lynn, and with all of you. I am I'm grateful and I'm blessed. Thanks again.
All right, and here is our ending song.
table. Come to the feast. Come be the giver of the praise. Come as a lover. Come as a friend. Come join the joy that will not end. As you sow, you shall reap. If it's love you would keep, if it's love for which you live, then love you must give. Come join the living, come as you are, come for a moment, come to stay. Some come by fire, some by flood, but to love it's all the same.
All right. Thank you all. I'm going to end this recording and hang up with you guys. I love you. And thanks again for doing it this way, Jacqueline and Tom. I love you guys.